Good evening. More than 11,000 people are now thought to have been killed in southern Asia after an undersea earthquake sent enormous waves rolling across the Indian Ocean.
Inside the tower, it was like a war zone.
Let's start this morning with the very latest on the major earthquake in the South Asian country of Nepal.
Welcome to Louder Than Words, the podcast from the University of Essex. I'm Professor Jules Pretty.
And I'm journalist Martha Dixon. This episode is all about disasters and how we prepare for them.
My research finds that you cannot really rely on government to help yourself, especially in the aftermath of a disaster.
We talk to academics at the University of Essex about how their work is helping us understand the cause of disasters and to prevent them happening again.
My research helps people in authority to face uncomfortable truths that actually this happened.
And we talk to those on the ground that are benefiting from partnerships with the University of Essex, like in Sri Lanka.
People who are facing the disasters, that means the first responders, they are the community. So the community need to help each other. They have to have their own capacity. Community enhancement is very much important.
The big question we are looking at in this episode of Louder Than Words is this: are disasters preventable?
So my research pays attention to the structural. It says why things happen and why they happen to certain people, why disasters can't be considered to be out of the blue.
Academics at the University of Essex are looking into how societies can prepare for or even prevent future disasters. They do that by looking at events from the past.
Dark heat, pitch black, toxic smoke, but in the worst possible circumstances.
72 people died when the high-rise block of flats in London called Grenfell Tower caught fire back in June 2017.
My name's John Preston. I'm Professor of Sociology here at the University of Essex, and I'm here to tell you about my research on preparedness and disasters. Well, what I do is look at the social side of disasters. So rather than the psychological side, I'm looking at the sociological side, if you like. And my research is on preparedness, so how people prepare for disasters and how governments and local authorities prepare us for disasters. And I think that you need to go into the sort of deep roots of preparedness culture, if you like, in the United Kingdom to find out why things like Grenfell actually happened. So my research is about exploring the roots of those things and why they occurred in the way that they actually did.
In his new book about Grenfell Tower, Preparedness, Race and Disaster Capitalism, Professor John Preston says Grenfell is one of the most tragic political events in British history.
He argues how disaster preparedness at Grenfell was related to wider institutional racism and disadvantage in the area. He says this was demonstrated in the stay-put strategy, asking the residents of the tower to stay in their flats as the building burned.
Preparedness is very centralised. It's centralised by governments and local authorities. There isn't much cooperation with communities. So in New Zealand, it's very decentralised and communities have a big role. In Japan, it's very much in the lifelong learning culture of those societies. And it's very individualised. So we have a system where governments and local authorities keep most of the preparedness plans. And then individuals are just allowed to get on with it on their own. And we've also got a big history because of that in the United Kingdom of stay put as a default strategy for emergencies. So to stay inside, particularly if people are from working class or ethnic minority backgrounds, the advice is often to stay put rather than to be mobile. And the reason for this really is because government and local authorities are really fearful of social control and disruption in disasters and emergencies. So a big fear is that they're not going to be able to control what happens, which goes against a lot of the literature, because actually in practice, people are actually really good and communities are really good at responding to disasters. You've got to set it in its social context, in terms of the path dependencies of past preparedness, in terms of what happened at Grenfell. So Grenfell had the stay put strategy, the kind of default strategy that government and local authorities have in emergencies, and also there hadn't been much research into tower block fires. It was only after 9/11 really that people started to consider and to think about what should happen in an emergency in tower blocks. And a lot of money was put into research into evacuations there.
John says he found evidence in his research of discrimination when it comes to being prepared for disasters.
The tower block never had sprinklers, it hadn't rehearsed evacuations. And this is to do with kind of the social class of people who are in the tower block and how they were treated, and also their racial position. So we often find that working class people, people from ethnic minorities, are not given the same access to preparedness information and routines as other individuals. So, for example, Canary Wharf rehearses, once or twice a year, evacuation procedures, and they've got sprinklers, other facilities, and the fire service is very well prepared for that. So in terms of looking for, you know, that as a piece of the puzzle, it's obviously one piece of the puzzle in what is bigger structures. So my research pays attention to the structural. It says why things happen and why they happen to certain people, why disasters can't be considered to be out of the blue, why Aberfan, Hillsborough, Grenfell, people knew that something was going to happen, and they'd obviously, you know, told the authorities that this was a real risk. Why certain voices get ignored in that? Why working class voices get ignored?
John's research went towards a report that exposed a local charity, the Westway Trust, of being institutionally racist when it came to the support they were meant to be giving to locals of the area, including the victims of Grenfell.
I see my research in a tradition of research on social justice in disasters and emergencies, and actually revealing that critical element of them, that actually people's lives do matter, working class lives matter, black and ethnic minority lives matter, that these aren't just slogans, that in disasters these things are often forgotten by authorities who say, well, disasters come out of the blue. We could never have predicted that this would actually happen. But I feel like the tide's turning a bit after Grenfell. You know, my research is all around social justice and to help people to, you know, get what should be rightfully theirs in an unjust society, in an inequitable society. So I suppose if I can do something about that, then that at least is a bit helpful.
Dr. Alex Quiroz-Flores from the University of Essex also researches the impact of disasters on poorer communities. His focus is global.
Let's start this morning with the very latest on the major earthquake in the South Asian country of Nepal.
Alex has been looking at the earthquake in Nepal in 2015 and what could have been done to improve the situation for those living there.
Leading charities say as many as 2 million children have been affected by the devastation.
So the first thing that I try to understand is why some disasters, similar disasters, are more deadly in some places than in others, right? Why the same magnitude earthquake is going to kill more people in place A than in place B. So that's the first part. Right? The second part that is connected to this is the political implications of this, right? Because sometimes, you know, that difference between, you know, a high toll and a low toll of disaster has to do with political motivations and political incentives, right? So this is important because I want the public to understand that they cannot always rely on central government to help themselves in the aftermath of a disaster, and they need to help each other.
Alex says the impact of his work is to persuade the international community to give more support to help people on the ground and the local bodies around them, because governments often don't or simply can't help.
My research finds that you cannot really rely on government, right, to help yourself, especially in the aftermath of a disaster. You can rely on government when they are wealthy and democratic, and they actually have incentives to go and help out. But the wealthy democratic governments around the world, there are not so many of them. Right, there are only a few that meet these characteristics, also with a history of disasters. Japan is one of them. The U.S. is one of them. But Nepal is not one of them. Right, it's not wealthy. It's democratic, but it's not wealthy, so it cannot really help the community. There are some countries that are poor, but also are not particularly democratic. So they have incentives to actually not help people out. It's quite convenient politically for them. So my research shows that it's actually convenient for autocrats to let people suffer, right? To let people die in disasters. It's convenient politically for them, right? So that's what my research shows, which means that you really just, communities have to rely on themselves. They have to help each other, because the central government will not have either the resources or the political incentives to actually go and help them out. Well, I would like the international community to be more supportive of a country like Nepal, but also like a country like Haiti, who are very poor and prone to disasters. I want the international community to help the NGOs in the fields or on the field in these countries, right? And I would like the international community to address long-term issues of just education. So it's not just about disaster preparedness. It's not about disaster response. It's about providing the long-term infrastructure that help people to have the education, the literacy, and the ability to protect themselves in the future. And finally, and I think this is pretty important, is that I would like the international community, especially developed countries, to think about climate change and how climate change is going to just increase the number and the magnitude of disasters, right? Because if this is not addressed, then this is going to get worse.
Alex says the work he does is having influence on how authorities look at disasters around the world.
My work gets noticed when bad things happen, right? But I think slowly, there's a group of researchers in the social sciences, but also in the physical sciences, who are trying to send this message. Right, which is, yeah, it's about infrastructure and preparedness and response, and we have the knowledge in terms of what is needed physically to protect the place, right? But it's also about the political message. It's getting through. I mean, I think international organizations are paying attention. Every now and then, central governments also pay attention, and they realize this, especially the democratic ones. Right, so the message is out there, and it's just about being picked up, especially by the international community. Autocratic governments are not going to pick it up, because that's precisely, they don't have incentives to pick it up. Right, it is the international community that has to pick it up and encourage other countries to change their ways.
Good evening. More than 11,000 people are now thought to have been killed in southern Asia after an undersea earthquake sent enormous waves rolling across the Indian Ocean. The quake measured 8.
Originally from Sri Lanka. These are my fellow communities, and these are, as I said before, these are another human beings and losing lives. 50,000 people lost their life. So it is a horrible event and unimaginable.
Professor Kelam Jayasinghe is also in the business of disaster preparedness at the University of Essex. For him, the tsunami in Sri Lanka in 2004 was tragic. His home country was badly affected on the east of the island. He's delighted he was able to contribute to a United Nations plan to help countries like Sri Lanka prepare better for disasters like these.
This document we produced by UN, and I contributed heavily from my background as an accountant, accounting scholar, accounting and accounting accountability and development. So this document was publicly available for national governments and whoever working in the disaster risk reduction area. So one of the problems that these governments find within these institutions is that they are not working together. So they like work as separate entities. So that create problems and the difficulties in delivering the services to public, the local communities. So my work is very much that connected with this issue. So I develop a framework called collaborative accountability. So I've done research and written very much about this topic. And then using these findings that I then help these governments to develop policies to make these organizations work collaboratively.
Killam says he's pleased he can offer something so valuable to the community as an academic.
I feel so happy because, end of the day, that what matters is that when we see that the other people using and appreciating our contributions, to using it for the to help the well-being of the fellow communities, that's where the satisfaction coming up. And then I try to help establish the local government policies, local governance policies more specifically, in relation with the work I did with the UN, the collaborative governance. So then local level, how these organizations can work together collaboratively to help these disaster victims, future disaster victims, and to help these people to prepare their lives. So my work in that sense directly related with the communities, and then help the disaster management center to develop such policies to make these local organizations working together.
Professor Killam is one key partner working in the disaster management sector. He's closely collaborate with disaster management center to do pilot level activities based on the research output, what he has done so far.
Anoja Senavaratne works for the Disaster Management Centre of Sri Lanka. She says working with the University of Essex has been a very positive partnership, helping them establish vital systems on the ground in order to prevent the devastating consequences of the tsunami and other disasters ever happening again.
Of course, we are having new plans. Earlier, actually in 2004, when the tsunami hits to the country, at that time we didn't have any early warning mechanism, information sharing mechanism, then understanding on the disasters and all. Actually, we at that time, most of the people are like blind, right? So. But after the tsunami, now we have implemented number of programs, particularly focusing on the mitigation, preparedness, training awareness, and emergency response, early warning in all these aspects of the disaster risk management. We are disseminating all the message, risk assessment information, vulnerability information, exposure mapping things, and all these informations we readily available to get the public, then public awareness and the decision makers also can use this information. So at the same time, community is always using these our maps and hazard maps, inundation maps like that. We are having different maps. So people are using all these maps. Then at the same time, the most important one is that with the environment observations, we enable people to get the self decision. Now, when the tsunami early warning comes, people may not go to the coast to see what is happening in the sea. Actually, University of Essex, so they had that program. So then, with their support, because they have novel ideas, right? So the other thing is that their exposure is quite different. So that exposure is very much important, and particularly those innovative things will enhance the knowledge of the officials even involved into this. So academic people and the practitioners. So amalgamation of these two sectors are very much important for the successful implementation.
these contributions by UN and then serving the public very much than any other sort of contribution. So it's more like a public services and then the protection of people, protection of fellow human beings through these policies is what matters to me, and that gives me the most satisfaction as an academic.
This is Louder Than Words, the podcast from the University of Essex. This episode was all about how academics at the university are helping people all around the world prepare for disasters.
Thank you for listening. You can find all our podcasts, as well as more information about the contributors and their subjects, at the Centre for Public and Policy Engagement site at the University of Essex.